Nana, with varieties of Aranya Pashu, jungle animals, Vrata, multitude, Sankula, filled, Droni, with valleys, Alankrita, very beautifully decorated, Chitra, varieties of Druma, trees, Sura Udyana, gardens maintained by the demigods, Kala Kanta, sweetly chirping, Vihangama, birds. Translation: the valleys beneath Trikuta Mountain are beautifully decorated by many varieties of jungle animals, and in the trees, which are maintained in gardens by the demigods, varieties of birds chirp with sweet voices. Text 8. Trikuta Mountain has many lakes and rivers with beaches covered by small gems resembling grains of sand. The water is as clear as crystal, and when the demigod damsels bathe in it, their bodies lend fragrance to the water and the breeze, thus enriching the atmosphere. Purport: even in the material world, there are many grades of living entities. The human beings on earth generally cover themselves with external fragrances to stop their bad bodily odors. But here we find that because of the bodily fragrance of the demigod wives, the rivers, lakes, and breeze, an entire atmosphere of Trikuta Mountain has become fragrant. Since the bodies of the damsels and upper planetary systems are so beautiful, we can just imagine how beautifully formed are the bodies of the Vaikuntha damsels, or the damsels of in Vrindavan, the gopis. In the valley of Trikut Mountain, there was a garden called Ritumat. This garden belonged to the great devotee Varuna and was a sporting place for the damsels of the demigods. Flowers and fruits grew there in all seasons. Among them were mandaras, parijatas, patalas, ashokas, champakas, chutas, pialas, panasas, mangoes, amritakas, kramukas, coconut trees, date trees, and pomegranates. There were madukas, palm trees, tamals, asanas, arjunas, aristas, udumbaras, palakshas, banyan trees, kimsukas, and sandalwood trees. There were also pichumardas, kovidaras, saralas, asuradarus, grapes, sugarcane, bananas, jambu, butteries, akshas, abayas, and mulakis. Okay. In that garden, there was a very large lake filled with shining golden lotus flowers, and the flowers known as Kumuda, Kalara, Utpala, and Shatapatra, which added excellent beauty to the mountain. There were also Bilva, Kapida, Jambir, and Mbola Taka trees. Intoxicated bumblebees drank honey and hummed with the chirping of the birds whose songs were very melodious. The lake was crowded with swans, karavanas, chakravakas, cranes, and flocks of water chickens, datyuhas, koyastis, and other murmuring birds. Because of the agitating movement of the fish and tortoises, the water was decorated with pollen that had fallen from the lotus flowers. The lake was surrounded by kadamba flowers, vetasa flowers, nalas, nipas, vanjulakas, kundas, kurubakas, ashokas, sirishas, kutajas, ingudas, kubjakas, svarnayutis, nagas, punakas, jatis, mallika, shatapatras, jalakas, and madhavilatas. The banks were also abundantly adorned with varieties of trees that yielded flowers and fruits in all seasons. Thus the entire mountain stood gloriously decorated. Purport: judging from the exhaustive description of the lakes and rivers on Trikut Mountain on Earth, there is no comparison to their super excellence. On other planets, however, there are many such wonders. For instance, we understand that there are 2 million different types of trees, and not all of them are exhibited on Earth. Srimad Bhagavatam presents this the total knowledge of the affairs of the universe. It not only describes this universe, but takes into account the spiritual world beyond the universe. No one can challenge Srimad Bhagavatam's descriptions of the material and spiritual worlds. The attempts to go from the earth to the moon have failed, but the people of earth can understand what exists on other planets. There's no need of imagination. One may take actual knowledge of Srimad Bhagavatam and be satisfied. The leaders of the elephants lived in the forest of the mountain. Trikuta once wandered towards the lake with his female elephants. He broke many plants, creepers, thickets, and trees, not caring for their piercing thorns. Simply by catching the scent of that elephant, all the other elephants, the tigers and ferocious animals such as lions, rhinoceroses, great serpents, and black and white shadabas fled in fear. The Chamari deer also fled. By the mercy of this elephant, animals like the foxes, wolves, buffaloes, bears, boars, gopuchas, porcupines, monkeys, rabbits, other deer, and many small animals loitered elsewhere in the forest. They were not afraid of him. Purport, all the animals were practically controlled by this elephant, yet although they could move without fear because of respect, they did not stand before him. Surrounded by the herds, other elephants, including females, and followed by the young ones, Gajapati, leader of the elephants, made Trikuta Mountain tremble all around because of the weight of his body. He was perspiring, liquor dripping from his mouth, and his vision was overwhelmed by intoxication. He was being served by bumblebees who drank honey, and from a distance he could smell the dust of the lotus flowers, which was carried from the lake by the breeze. Thus surrounded by his associates who were afflicted by thirst, he soon arrived at the bank of the lake. The king of the elephants entered the lake, bathed thoroughly, and was relieved of his fatigue. Then, with the aid of his trunk, he drank the cold, clear nectarian water, which was mixed with the dust of lotus flowers and water lilies, until he was fully satisfied. Like a human being who lacks spiritual knowledge and too attached to the members of his family, the elephant, being illusioned by the external energy of Krishna, had his wives and children bathe and drink the water. Indeed, he raised water from the lake with his trunk and sprayed it over them. He did not mind the hard labor involved in this endeavor. By the arrangement of Providence, O King, a strong crocodile was angry at the elephant and attacked the elephant's leg in the water. The elephant was certainly strong, and he tried his best to get free from this danger sent by Providence. Therefore, seeing Gajendra in that grave condition, his wives felt very, very sorry and began to cry. The other elephants wanted to help Gajendra, but because of the crocodile's great strength, they could not rescue him by grasping him from behind. O King, the elephant and the crocodile fought in this way, pulling one another in and out of the water for 1,000 years. Upon seeing the fight, the demigods were very surprised. Thereafter, because of being pulled into the water and fighting for many long years, the elephant became diminished in his mental, physical, and sensual strength. The crocodile, on the contrary, being an animal of the water, increased in enthusiasm, physical strength, and sensual power. Purport, in fighting between the elephant and crocodile, the difference was that the elephant was extremely powerful, that although the elephant was extremely powerful, he was in a foreign place in the water. During 1,000 years of fighting, he could not get any food, and under the circumstances, his bodily strength diminished, and because his bodily strength diminished, his mind also became weak, and his senses less powerful. The crocodile, however, being an animal of the water, had no difficulties. He was getting food, and therefore getting mental strength and sensual encouragement. Thus, the elephant became reduced in strength. The crocodile became more and more powerful. Now, from this we may take the lesson that in our fight with Maya, we should not be in a position in which our strength, enthusiasm, and senses will be unable to fight vigorously. Our Krishna consciousness movement has actually declared war against the illusory energy in which all the living entities are rotting in false understanding of civilization. The soldiers in this Krishna consciousness movement must always possess physical strength, enthusiasm, sensual power. To keep themselves fit, they must therefore place themselves in a normal condition of life. What constitutes a normal condition will not be the same for everyone, and therefore their divisions of Varnashram, Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Sudra, Brahmacharya, Grihastha, Vanaprastha, and Sannyas. Especially in this age, Kali Yuga, it is advised that no one takes sannyas. Okay. Asamedam Gavalam Bam Sannyasam Pala Paitrakam Deva Reina Sitopatim Kalau Pancha Vibarjayat. From this we understand that in this age the sannyasa ashram is forbidden because people are not strong. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu showed us an example in taking sannyasa at the age of 24 years, but even Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya advised Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to be extremely careful because he had taken sannyasa at an early age. For preaching, we give young boys sannyasa, but actually it is being experienced that they are not fit for sannyasa. There is no harm, however, if one thinks that he is unfit for sannyasa. If he is very much agitated sexually, he should go to the ashram where sex is allowed, namely the Grihastha ashram. That one has been found to be very weak at one place does not mean he should stop fighting the crocodile Maya. One should take shelter of the lotus feet of Krishna as we see Gajendra do. And at the same time, one can be a Grihastha if he's satisfied with sexual indulgence. There's no need to give up the fight. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu therefore recommended Stani Stita Shruti Guttam Tanu Vari Manobi. One may stay in whichever ashram is suitable for him. It is not essential one takes sannyas. If one is sexually agitated, he can enter the Grihastha ashram. But one must continue fighting. For one who is not in a transcendental position to take sannyas artificially is not a very great credit. If sannyas is not suitable, one may enter the Grihastha ashram and fight Maya with great strength. But one should not give up the fighting and go away. So, all these verses were a description of the place around Trikuta Mountain. And there's a big long list of trees and birds, etc., animals in that forest. And we'll find that quite often in different descriptions. And those lists are given to show the great variety of plants and animals which indicate the luxuriant nature of that place. So in that place, Gajendra was the king of the animals, and all the other animals would hide themselves when he appeared out of great respect. But we see that then he was attacked by the crocodile. So he wasn't so strong after all. Maybe on the land he was strong, but in the water he wasn't. So for 1,000 years he had to fight with the crocodile. And it's described that gradually he became weakened because he didn't have many food, and the crocodile became stronger because he was in his natural habitat, the water. So this is a dangerous situation for the elephant, who was strong normally on the land. So Prabhupada takes this opportunity to comment on the position of the human beings. In one position they are strong, in another position they are weak. Of course, everybody in the material world in one sense is weak. Because Maya is very strong. So there are various remedies. So one is the Varna Ashram system, which Prabhupada here describes. And according to the your suitability, and then you choose the proper ashrama and varna. Particularly the ashrama is important because, for instance, the sannyasa ashram is very difficult for many people. So therefore, many will offer grihastha ashram. So in any case, whatever is suitable for the particular person, they use that ashram. And then they practice their spiritual life. So one is not necessarily better than the other, one ashram, but what is suitable to the person, that is what is considered. Just as if one is on land as an elephant, then that is a stronger position. So one person may be suitable for sannyasa ashram, another for grihastha ashram, another for brahmacharya ashram, etc. So we have to choose properly the place where we can best practice our spiritual life. Yeah. So here standard is the ability to pursue our spiritual life. What is the best position for that? Other people will not consider that, and they will consider their ashram based on other things, where I can get more enjoyment, for instance. So that is not how we're judging the ashram. It is according to best for spiritual life. Hmm? However, though this is one way of looking at it, the other way of looking at it is according to the absolute spiritual platform. That is, that our main idea is to practice spiritual life. And in practicing bhakti, then even considerations of varna and ashram begin to disappear. They do not disappear for the gyanis and others, karmis. And they have to consider varna, ashram, etc. For the devotee, however, varnas and ashrams become less and less significant. And therefore, we'll find in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Lord Chaitanya in many places rejects the whole system. At the same time, we see Lord Chaitanya took sannyas and he was in the system. But theoretically, he is rejecting the system. So, what does that mean? That means that the process of bhakti is a superior process. So if we practice that, other things become insignificant. If we don't have bhakti, then definitely the varnashram system will be of great necessity for us, for our purification and steadiness. In the process of bhakti, however, it becomes less significant. We're not dependent on that. And therefore, in the ninth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, when Krishna talks about the bhakta who commits a sinful activity, then he doesn't say, become situated in the varnashram system. What does he say? Just practice bhakti. So the solution for his steadiness is bhakti itself, nothing else. Of course, as we see, Lord Chaitanya was in the society which practiced varnashram to some degree, so therefore he followed those rules and regulations. At the same time, he's actually, because he's Supreme Lord also, he's beyond the regulations. But then we find devotees also beyond the rules and regulations. So we find the Goswamis. They were not sannyasis. They were not grihasthas. They were not brahmacharis. They were not vanaprasthas. They were just sitting in Vrindavan. In fact, they were probably outside the varnashram system because they had associated with Muslims, many of them. So therefore, they were rejected also. So it wasn't a consideration that they had to situate themselves in this ashram or that ashram or whatever. They simply dedicated themselves to Supreme Lord and chanted. So therefore, they weren't dependent on the system. But of course, we see that some people were in the system. So many of Lord Chaitanya's followers followed the Grihastha ashram properly. And Lord Chaitanya himself was following Grihastha ashram. Then he took sannyas. So according to the circumstances, sometimes the devotees do follow. But the principle is, it's not the necessity. It is an optional thing. And therefore we find the Goswamis in the opposite way. So this also applies to outside India. So therefore what do people who are not in India do? They can also follow bhakti. There's no varnashram system there at all. Yet they can also follow bhakti. Because it doesn't depend on that system. They cannot practice jnana, though, because that requires that whole system. So therefore, the steadiness must definitely be there. And on the lower level, yes, we situate ourselves in ashramas, etc., proper ashramas, and we practice devotion or whatever. But on the higher level, of course, even if those ashramas are not there, if we practice sincerely and dedicate ourselves to the Supreme Lord, naturally the devotee will reach the level of sense control, etc. So we go through stages, anartha vritti, and then we get to nishta. Nishta means steadiness. So this indicates a stage in our bhakti where the attraction for Krishna is slightly more than our attraction for Maya. and therefore it is easier to control the senses. The process after that, where we go through ruchi, asakti, bhava, up to prema, is a process of further reducing the influence of maya and increasing the attraction to Krishna. But none of these stages are perfect, only prema. So before that stage, there's possibility of problem of attack by maya. But it's less likely than below nishta, when we're at anishta stage. Then obviously maya is stronger, devotional sentiment less, therefore more likely to have problem. Well, therefore, at least the devotee has to come to the stage of nishta, then he can practice nicely. If he does not come to nishta, he will always have this problem of maya being stronger. So he has to come to nishta. How does he come to nishta? Of course, practicing bhakti. But because maya is very strong, how can he practice bhakti nicely? Because it's disturbed. So one good solution there is that he have good association, sadhu sangha. So if he has good association and he is at the anishtha stage, then it's very likely he can come to nishta easily. If he does not have that association, then it is very difficult. So this is a way in which everyone can practice. In terms of discovering their stage, anishta or nishta. And in all cases, we take out, or we involve ourselves with association of devotees. So this makes the whole process easier. That does not mean, of course, that we've reached nishta, then we can give up association of devotees and just go on our own. No. As I said, that maya is always there up until prema. So therefore, the devotee has to be careful in any case. So the safeguard is devotional association. So therefore, the main factor here is the practice of bhakti itself. Now, due to bad association, then of course, at any stage, one could have problems. So even in bhava stage, problem can arise. So we see the example of Bharat. He got association of a little deer. Then he had problems because of the little deer. And he gave up worship of the Lord because of that. So it may come in some unexpected manner, even on bhava stage. But nevertheless, Krishna says, just practice bhakti. And then that's your solution to the whole problem. In the case of Bharat, of course, he couldn't practice so much because he became a deer. But he was given the blessing of having memory. So even as a deer, he avoided bad association. And when he became a human being as Jat Bharat, and then very definitely he avoided all bad association of his family members, and even his father rejected everybody because he knew it was all maya. And he simply concentrated on the Supreme Lord. And that way he got his perfection. Of course, he was, as Jat Bharat, he also rejected varnas and ashramas completely. He was completely beyond everything. Therefore, the devotee has to understand that the saving factor in his development is the practice itself in the association of devotees. And this will determine his success. Varnas and ashramas are, to some extent, existent in ISKCON. Outside of ISKCON, not much. There's no sannyasis anywhere, hardly. Everyone just studies and works and gets married, so the varnashram system is such as kind of meaningless at the moment, so it doesn't really apply to most people in general. Yeah, ISKCON, of course, then we've put the system back a little bit, so there we can give regard to. Outside, then people are just working, etc. So all they can do is practice bhakti and get a good association. And that is their solution to all their problems. This is how they will get strength. So we have here the position of the water and the land. So the elephant is weak in the water, stronger on the land. For the devotee, if he's in the water, what is the water? Asatsanga, material world all around. Then he becomes weak. Then what is strength? Devotional association, sadhu sangha. So if he's in devotional association, he is like the elephant on the land. If he's in the has bad association, he's like the elephant in the water attacked by the crocodile. The message is the devotee should take association of the devotees. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, there's an example of the bhakti lata. The bhakti lata grows up. But then, several things happen. We get weeds, or anartas growing up, and we get big elephant coming along. This is a different type of elephant. There's a mad elephant who destroys the bhakti creeper. So just by stepping on the little plant, the plant disappears. So by offense, Vaishnava apara, then the bhakti creeper gets greatly damaged or can be destroyed. So how to guard against the elephant coming into the attacking the creeper and stepping on the creeper? So the advice given is you build a fence around your bhakti creeper so the animals don't get in. So what is the fence? The fence is sadhu sangha again. This is the protection from aparads, everything. In this way the creeper can grow nicely. So, of course, if you don't water the creeper, even if you put a fence around it, it won't grow. And if you don't take the weeds out, it still won't grow. So therefore, the devotee has to be attentive in his practice of bhakti. Like watering the tree, we have to hear and chant, etc. And we have to be attentive to avoiding the anartas. And if we do so, then the bhakti will get stronger and stronger and stronger. Maya gets weaker and weaker and weaker. So this is what the devotee has to do. He has to perform bhakti properly and take association. And then he is saved from all the problems in material existence. What's that? This was in another dvipa, apparently, because there was a milk ocean there. Yeah, so that's I think the second ring out or something, on the Bhumandala. So it was obviously not Bharatvarsha. It was somewhere else on the Bhumandala, but in the Bhusphere, Bhumandala. Well, there was also water here because there were lakes, and the elephant came to the lake to get water. So there's normal water also. In other words, the plants didn't drink milk; they had water also. So many, all these things are actually existing. We have mango trees, jackfruit trees mentioned here, ashok trees. This is quite common. We'll see in the Bhagavad in big descriptions like this. Also in other works, big long descriptions of animals, plants, etc. That all come up, all the different works. But there are existing plants in India, most of them. Some of the animals, no. Rurus don't exist, and sarabas, I don't think, exist. Certain animals don't exist now. There's an animal with six heads or something and whatever like that. We don't see those, but the other animals, like the chamara deer and the krishnasar deer and other animals do exist. But that is mercy of devotees. The mercy of the devotees, he gets bhakti, and then he's saved. If there's no mercy from devotees, then he'll continue in the material world, just wandering from body to body. What's that? Well, they couldn't do much, apparently, because if they went in the water, they'd also get attacked. It says they tried to help, yeah? But they couldn't do anything. They wanted to help Gajendra, but because of the crocodile's great strength, they could not risk him by grabbing him from behind. So they're trying to get the elephant out of the water. They couldn't do so. If they went in the water, they'd also get attacked.